Hi.
Hello.
Oh my God, episode 3.
I feel like these weeks have flown by, do
haven't
you?
They? Literally, it just becomes natural now. And I feel like the feedback that we're getting and the fact that we're really hitting home, because I think so many people can't believe how open and raw we've been.
I know, I've had a lot of that.
It's shocked people.
But then you've got to be, aren't you, when you're doing something like this? You're not going to cover anything up or
absolutely
sit behind things just because you're afraid of upsetting other people.
But I think that's what it was for me. I think when we got asked to do this, Nick, that was my non-negotiable. It was like, if I'm going to come on, you're going to see the good, the bad, the ugly. Because I think it's quite easy when you're in like an industry like aesthetics and you've got quite a big following that people just want to judge you how they want to judge you, and they see you in a different kind of light. That this for me was to see, look, I am human.
You were just normal.
Yeah.
Well, what we class as normal.
Bonkers. Yeah. But I just wanted to show that, you know what, like, I don't take life that seriously, and it's, I just let it kind of come as and when and literally appreciate everything
every
that
day
does come. Yeah.
How are you feeling after the weekend?
For me, Nick, I think I'm exhausted, really exhausted. But because this was my second one, I was able to step out my head a lot more and really go into my heart. So like half time on that mat when I was having some really overwhelming like releases, there was no like thought attached to it really. It was just whatever my body had been holding on to for all them years through all different traumatic parts of my life. Do you know what I mean? And I was quite shocked because obviously I brought Scott on it, didn't I?
Yeah. Do you know, I was dead proud of him at end because he was proper getting involved, wasn't he, on Sunday?
Honestly, like obviously I've always nicknamed our blot, and that come from because when he was a child, he had the best face. It was full of freckles.
Aww.
And literally he'd get up every day and he'd be like, count another freckle, how many I've got. In the end, they just all joined up. So I used to call him our blotty, and it's just always stuck. So when he was in there, I just kept on looking over and going, oh my God, blotty, you're doing so amazing. Because on the Friday he come in and he was like, where am I?
To be fair, he was a bit like that on Saturday. I felt like I could sort of resonate a bit with him then, because I only came in on the Saturday, didn't I? And I was sort of trying to set him out, how are you feeling? Because I wasn't sure whether he'd done any of the work before or not.
First time round, because Oscar, he's like, he doesn't cry. Like everything's like, oh, I'm strong, here's my armor, do you know what I mean? And like obviously from losing mom, he'd lost, because what people don't realise about Oscar and Lauren, they'd had 2 ectopic pregnancies either side of my mum's death. So like in the January, they'd lost a baby through another ectopic. It was quite, I think they were about 6 to 7, 8 weeks. Then mum went in the February. Then they had another ectopic like April, March. So like he'd had so much go on in such a short space. But there was no release from him. And he was like, I'm fine, straight back into work. That I was like, there's no way you're fine. So then when I started obviously doing all this work, I was like, I'd love to do this with Oscar. And I just put it out there and I was like, look, I feel so good off this. Would you do it with me? Like, so it was Christmas and his birthday coming up and I was like, I could buy you anything, do you know what I mean? But can I buy you this as like a gift because I feel like you're going to get so much out of it? And he was like, okay, I'll give it a go. And I was like, oh my God, he's agreed. And I couldn't believe it. So when he did, I was like, okay, I'm getting somewhere here. Because I think as well, it's so easy for me with Scott to mother him, and I've always mothered him from a kid. And it's just again because mum was in such a bad place when we were younger, like there was so much like kind of manic depression there. She would just sleep constantly, that there was only me and Scotty at that time, and I'd just always be the one looking out for him. Do you know what I mean? I remember I'd get him dressed for school. I'd be 9 and I'd be walking him to school, walking him home, and our Scott would only be like 6. But I look back now and I think, God, I could never imagine not going to pick Cody up from school and him just walking home now at 9.
Yeah.
And that's what I would be doing. And back in the day, they'd allow it. So like I'd come out of school and all the mums would be picking the kids up and I'd just be walking home with our Scotty because my mum was just such in a bad place. Obviously with what happened and everything, like I always forget that mum was only like 27 when we were that age, and could I have coped with that amount of stress with what was going on? with my mum at that time and what she was dealing with and internalising, that I kind of went from the flip side of having a lot of resentment to like, wow, I'd have broke.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? So then it was quite mad what come up for me this weekend, because there was so much like, not like guilt, but I was like, where does this mothering come from with our Scott? Because even like one of the teachers on there was like, I see when he goes to talk, he looks over to you as if to say, is it all right? Do you know what I mean? Because it's just always been what it's been with me and Scott. And it was just, I need to let go of that. I'm his sister, I'm not his mum.
Yeah.
But it's so hard, isn't it? That I was on the mat during one of the breath works. And me and Scott always laugh about this. So when he was born, I was like, what, four or five? And I had Skittles and it was a hot summer's day and my mum was hanging the washing out and he was only in his cradle. He must have been about 6 months old and I fed him a Skittle. But he nearly choked to death. Like, it was so bad. And we laugh about it now because you remember when you nearly killed me? And I was like, oh my God. Like, because I did.
Yeah.
But it was only that we had this old, like, police dog. It was a little Alsatian called Zara. And he must have seen what was going on and went and was barking in the back garden to me mum as if to say, come in. Do you know what I mean? And was dragging her in, like, kind of as if to say, come in, because he was aware of what was going on with Scott choking on this Skittle. And obviously, everything was fine. Like, she'd got it out and, like, obviously, he was okay. But I must have, the trauma of that I just submerged, like going through life, when I was on the mat, because Scott was in the room, I hadn't spoken about this story for months with our Scott, probably like years, but all this guilt and overwhelming guilt was coming up for me. And I was like, whoa, where's this coming from? Like I was five when it happened, but it was just, I was crying my eyes out with guilt thinking, this is where it had stemmed from, whereas I must have gone from being sister role then into this protective kind of, I've got to protect him from that point onwards. And I feel like that's where it actually really installed that trauma into me when I was like five, and to think that it's only just coming up now for me, that it's hard.
Yeah, but I've said, bloody hell, like for me, I left on Sunday.
Yeah.
And Monday, Tuesday, I just felt like I couldn't be on my phone. I didn't want to leave the bubble that I was in.
Yeah.
And obviously I've got people who I speak to nearly every day, friends or, you know,
yeah,
my mum, whatever. And I felt like I just weren't able to use my phone.
Yeah.
And sometimes, like, obviously we've got businesses and things and that's the reason we need to be on our phones. But even that, for one of the days, I just didn't post anything.
Yeah.
Because I just felt like I just weren't able to.
Yeah.
But when I was in, on the Saturday, when we did the first breath work, I felt like I just lied on my mat. And it's probably hilarious if there was CCTV footage of me. But I would just lie like I was doing a meditation.
Yeah.
Just breathing normally, normal breathing, mouth closed, yeah, like more or less closed. And I could hear everybody else. And I was fixating on everybody else.
Yeah.
But then I was crying because I was thinking, what are these going through?
Yeah.
Like, what traumas have they been through to feel this way?
Absolutely.
And I'm soft and an emotional person anyway.
Yeah.
So, like, I cry at TV programmes.
Absolutely.
I'll cry at a song.
Yeah.
So then when it got towards the end where we was lied flat and the songs with words then came on,
yeah,
I thought, what is going on in this room?
It's intense, isn't
yeah.
it?
Yeah. Yeah. But then I felt like on the Sunday, in fact, it was David that came and sat outside of me and he just said,
yeah,
are you okay? And I just went, I'm just really struggling to get this breathing, to really fixate in on this breathing. And he was like, right. He sort of gave me some little tips and tricks of keep your mouth open, just make the noise.
Yeah.
Every time you get a thought, it's okay. Like, acknowledge it.
Yeah.
But then, right, bring yourself back to your breath.
No, absolutely.
So I felt like that section of my breathing is when I got what everyone into else it, was getting.
Yeah. And it's hard as well because it is, when you first do it, you're like, oh, this is doing nothing to me. But once you submerge into that work and you learn how to do that conscious breath work, it just unravels things that you didn't realise were there. Like you've just felt as well on the mat that day, on Saturday and Sunday, Nick. Do you know what I mean? Once you really do it, you go, whoa, where are these emotions coming from? Because I didn't realise I was feeling this way.
Yeah. But then even the work in between, like the unlayering,
yeah,
the picking things apart, like I've heard of it before.
Yeah.
Because it's always brought up in self-development that people want to get to the bottom of.
Of course.
Andrew was calling it peeling the onion.
Well, yeah, because that is how some people do explain it. Like literally when you first start, it's just literally one layer. And that's how I was. I come in so tight and like literally kind of feeling like I need us to kind of release something, because last summer I felt like I'm going to have a nervous breakdown if I carry on holding all this weight that I had on. But when I started doing the breath work, Nick, it was like each time a little bit more had come off, then a little bit more, then a little bit more. And then it wasn't until I did my first retreat with Kelly that I remember laying on the mat and it was just the way I was breathing. So because I had lots of grief, I was holding it all in my chest. So I would be constantly getting chest pains and stuff like that because I hadn't dealt with the emotions that were literally in me. So it was all held in my chest. That I went into a breath work and I went into a full-blown panic attack. Now, I've never had a panic attack in my life, to the point where I was like, what is going on with me? I can't breathe. Like literally, there was tears rolling down my eyes. I was just looking and Kelly was just looking, look at me, just look at me, carry on trying to breathe, but look at me. And I physically couldn't get my breath. Then when I come round, I was like, what's just happened? And she was like, you've just had a massive trauma release. And for me, it was watching my mum die in hospital because she had the COPD. Her breath and her breathing of that kind of struggle would always trigger me, do you know what I mean? And I must have literally not dealt with it, that PTSD, after being there them few days with her. That whenever I was doing breath work, I'd be doing the breath work and the conscious connecting, but I'd have this rattle in my breath. Now, I've got no like kind of lung comorbidities or anything like that. There's nothing wrong with me in terms of like, you know, like kind of that area. And I'd be breathing and it was the same sound that my mum had had. And it was this rattle constantly when I'd do like the connection breath. So it would just be like, it needed to go. Do you know what I mean? And as we worked through it, that released. And then what happened next was all the trauma was held in like my hip area. And it was because obviously there was a lot of trauma with like sexual abuse and stuff like that in the family, that's where I held everything. So for me, anything to do with like sex and stuff like that, it was just like, oh, I was very, very like arm's length, because it was just something that I always felt was dirty. So kind of for me, if it was going to be in a sexual relationship with someone, it was someone that needed to be, I was really close with.
Yeah.
And whenever I do have them kind of relationships, I never leave on bad terms. They're always kind of, if we've left, it's never been on a bad term. Things that the door's always open and I'm always there to help. Do you know what I mean? I never let people go easily who I've had kind of close relationships with, because for me to open up in that way is a big thing. Like just, I'm not one that, it needs to be a deep connection, because for me, like anything like that, it was just like, oh, I can't go near it. It was just felt dirty. And it was just because trauma had gone on through like ancestral trauma through my family. So all my trauma was in my hips. So it'd be like they'd come round and they'd start to move like my legs and stuff like that to get release it all. And then it's funny, once it does release, it literally, so I do like loads of yoga now. So before I used to do breath work and release that trauma from my hips, trying to get into like certain positions, I couldn't. I was so tight around my hips because it was all stored there, that once I started to release it in this conscious breath work, literally the yoga poses, I can get into all kinds and hold them now because it's all released throughout my body. So if you think that whole midriff of me was just blocked energy from like grief and like ancestral trauma that had come through my family.
But that was the reason with me, with my leg. I have bad knees, and I say it like, yeah, I've got bad knees, mate. I've got bad knees, but never really looked into why or how.
Yeah.
But then I went to a physio and they did tell me that my knee sidetracked. So then I just stuck it. That's what's wrong with it.
Yeah.
Due to running in the wrong trainers and on the wrong treadmill when it was COVID.
Yeah.
But then when I had the tap in and she was like, that's your masculine energy.
Wow.
And that's when I was like, all right. So there is another reason behind the feeling that I get when I go for a squat. I feel like I can't go past a certain point because my knees are just crippled with pain.
And you're in the gym every day, so it's not like you're not healthy either. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, no, it's just, it really is just energies. And
yeah.
Like for me, like I think I've said it a couple of times now, man's for the sort of security and providing. And not that I want to go into that again because it's already been mentioned, but a lot of my trauma from the weekend.
Yeah.
Took me back to them times when I felt like I was out of control. I couldn't control what was going on in my life at the time. And that was the first time that I'd ever felt that I wasn't able to control something.
Absolutely.
So I sort of just got on with life thinking, right, I need to stay in control here. I can't let anybody else come in and hurt me. I cannot deal with going through what I've just gone through again. I just need to provide for the kids. I need to make sure we're all healthy, we're happy, with, you know, the main basics of living and surviving.
Absolutely.
So then mine took me back quite a way back. And like the feelings I was feeling was more like anger.
Yeah.
And with myself though.
Like, because you'd put yourself there.
Why have you let someone make you feel like that?
Yeah.
And that was how I was feeling. Not angry with them.
It's just because of what they've done. Yeah, because of course.
I understand that things happen for reasons and
yeah.
You've got to do what's right for you in the moment, and I completely agree and like I can accept that.
Yeah.
But what I've just never accepted is the fact that I've allowed that to happen to me.
No, of course. And take that kind of self-love from yourself as well, because ultimately you've been put in a situation where you've got the kiddies and you're probably thinking, shit, I'm alone. And that feeling is not nice to be in as well. And then to go into survival and think that you've then got to provide for all three kiddies. Now, you'd have done amazing anyway. Do you know what I mean?
And I know myself that obviously the things that have happened, I wouldn't be here today.
Yeah.
I know for a fact I would not be doing this today. When all that happened, I then went on the journey of uni and going doing all what I've done now with my business. But the things, it wasn't just the initial, like, being left with the kids.
Yeah.
Because, say, 10 years ago, I was left, but obviously I only had Frankie and Lottie then. So I was on my own with two kids at that point.
But I think what happens as well, because they're both girls, literally what happens is that there's so much feminine energy there that because you're left alone with the two girls, someone's got to bring the masculine energy for survival. And ultimately, you're the adult, so that's what's happened.
Yeah.
Because you've probably thought, we're all girls here, how are we surviving? So you go into overdrive and literally constantly then have to provide more and more and more.
And then this thing, well, for me, things happened afterwards as well, which I'm not going to go into on here, but
yeah,
it's just general life stuff once you've had a breakup or whatever, that things then happen. Yeah. And in them moments, it's like, well, why was I not good enough? Why do you think that it's okay to treat me like that?
Yeah.
Them's the sort of emotions I was feeling on the mat, and I'm all right with it. Like, I wouldn't go back to that life if it was given to me on a plate with a million quid. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, when you're kind of being so open in that relationship, you know, you've give two beautiful babies, and then to think, why was I treated like that? It's normal, and them are answers that you should be able to receive as well.
Yeah, but then for me, I also, on the Sunday, which was when me and you was at side of one another.
Oh my God, I was in bits.
I felt like because you was at side of me in that, like I could be more relaxed.
Yeah.
And then I felt that, like, the things that, I don't know, like as the kids got older then, I sort of still say it to this day, that Franca has seen, heard, and been involved in a lot of things that she shouldn't have.
But I think as well, because you're not aware of it then and you're not in your own consciousness.
Nothing major, by the way. It's not like a serious issue.
No, of course.
Just seeing me upset, yeah. Like that shouldn't have been a thing for her.
Absolutely. But at that time as well, there was two parents that wasn't conscious. So then what we do is we live in what we've been surrounded by and think that that's absolutely okay. Then you start to do this work and you go, oh, hang on a minute. Let's take a step back and bring it back to what it really is. Why are we really fighting? Because something internally in myself isn't feeling what I need, and the same within a dad. So then you've come to loggerheads because you can't communicate correctly because both of you are in this unconscious state of being able to go, well, how am I meant to? Well, you need to see my emotion and vice versa. When realistically, when you break it down, all it is that we both, these are both just wanting your basic need met and not communicating it.
Well, David's just been saying to me then, because he was asking how I'd been over the weekend, and he was saying, obviously, when, as an example, when you're born, you're born with none of this, none of these feelings, emotions. You literally love, and that's it. And then you're brought up in your house with your family and whatever goes on in there.
Yeah.
And say, for instance, the boy's brought up in theirs and whatever goes on in there.
Yeah.
When you two meet, you don't just pick the good parts and bring the good together to then build a house of happy, good vibes that you both think, like what I want from it and what you want from it.
What happens is you connect on a trauma bond. So when you do have these relationships come, obviously there's the initial like, oh, he's gorgeous, she's gorgeous, you know what I mean? But then what you tend to do is then bond on a trauma bond. So quite often, it'll be that there'll be something in yous both that yous have both been through. So you see each other at that point in each other, do you know what I mean? And that's where the comfort comes. And it's because, and then what happens is you're trying to, yous both start to grow, but then can't navigate. How do we get out with this trauma problem? Because this is what's brought us together. But then if one becomes more self-aware and then you're trying to bring the other one in, it's whether the other one's ready to as well. So you start to clash.
Yeah. And I find that a lot growing up with friendships. It's not just always relationships with man and woman, is it? It's friendships as well. But yeah, I just felt it was very awakening for me.
Well, I looked around and I remember just seeing how it had affected you. Do you know what I mean? At one
point, all I did was cry.
I think you had snot coming out your nose. Honest and I just wiped the snot off your nose because I could see how like emotionally you were taken in. And Kelly did say something about, obviously we have this scenario of the empath and the narcissists in the world, do you know what I mean? And she made a really clear point for me, and she was like, everyone's an empath. It's what we take out of that. So if I'm kind of getting an emotional energy attraction to yourself, because like you've kind of explained your story and I'm feeling that and I'm like, I'm getting a bit upset, there'll be something in me that needs fixing because I can relate to it. Whereas a narcissist is still an empath, but they'll take that in a different light. They'll kind of take that energy to fulfill something that they need to then fulfill in a way of them, do you know what I mean, to make them feel good.
Yeah.
We're both doing the same thing.
Because we discussed being empaths on our last podcast, didn't we? And I said to you, are you an empath? And then when we went in that room, I'm looking at you going, as if it's there.
Yeah.
Can you believe everybody's an empath? Because not everybody shows it in the same way, do they, like you say? But I felt that, like, the things she was coming out with about the, following people, like, rather than being you, don't be a follower that's following a follower.
But it's true, isn't it? Because I think we had this conversation as well, Nick. Like, I want everyone to see, well, whether I had an argument, whether you think I don't like you or not, I am still your cheerleader. I want you to go and do well. Do you know what I mean? I've never had any negative thoughts that I thought, do you know what? I hope you do shit in life. It's not me. That comes back then to kind of affect me. But I've always said, never be in competition with anyone, because the thing is, your path, Nick, isn't meant for me. So why am I competing against someone whose path isn't meant for me? My path's completely different, and it's just letting go of that control and letting life bring the opportunities. Like, this podcast's such a good example of it. We'd never set out to say, let's do a podcast. We'd set up to do like a platform of helping other aesthetic practitioners in an industry of negative where they've got no help. So we thought, okay, we'll set up this platform. Little did we know it had turned into this, from kind of a lot of negative energy that come from social media. And we were just like, hang on a minute, enough's enough. We're going to, and like, so we've come on to share our experiences. And by doing this, something that we didn't control or navigate and let happen naturally is helping so many people with the amount of messages that we're getting off the back of it.
Yeah. And I think, like you said, with the control side of things,
yeah,
it's so hard to release control over things. So when we had our little exercise with our little...
I miss it when she goes home.
Book. I messaged her saying, you have a safe life. Please, oh, I just love don't leave, that. Don't leave. Just please come to my house right now. But yeah, like the messages that I'd wrote in my book where we'd done the little exercises that she'd given to us. And I obviously reflected on it when I got home. And a lot of mine is like the control inside of things because I just want to protect.
Cool. And you, and the thing is, that's it. You're always in survival mode and stuff like that. Whereas who's, good job, like Andrew's the one now that's come in now for you, get what I mean? But you also need to be protected.
I know. And like that was something that I need to sort of learn more of, because I feel like I've said before, all I do, I am an independent woman and I can do this and I can do that. And that's okay to a certain extent, but then who's holding me?
Yeah.
Who's loving me?
Who's seeing you?
And who's seeing me doing what I want from my life as well?
Absolutely.
Because you don't sit ever, well, I don't ever sit back and think, well, who's holding me and seeing me now?
Do you know why I think it is? It's because you and I have always been in this fight or flight that, poor me doesn't exist. And I'm not saying it should, but it, again, it's like when people want to be there for you, you're like, oh no, it's okay, I've got this.
Yeah.
But actually, again, it's a control thing. What you're doing there is protecting anything that you don't want to feel, rather than say, do you know what? I'd really love a coffee if you don't mind. If you don't mind kind of coming and having a chat, because sometimes as well, just opening up, open something up in them. And it's just that divine kind of chat that's just beautiful that we should be having. And I do this with strangers as well. Like sometimes you sat next to someone, don't sit there just not speaking. Open up and say, hi, how are you? How are you doing? Because I always remember someone saying to me, it's the simplest of questions at the time when I was in my rut, I was in uni, I was just like, oh, everything was just like a whirlwind around me. Because it was like that, I wasn't feeling. There was just like our Scott the Weekend, he's not feeling, there's nothing there. It's always like
logic and stuff like you say.
I've got no trauma.
Yeah.
He's full of it.
Everybody is though, aren't they?
Do you know what I mean? But he's very much like, oh no, I don't want you to. So what you do then is you navigate life with no risk, because you're thinking, well, I'm not in control with life. So if I don't control this situation, well, I'm going to be, what's coming next? Because I don't like that feeling of not knowing. But then when you let go of that, it's quite beautiful what does happen.
Because things come in that you don't actually, like for instance, this, like you say, I feel that sometimes I can't sort of let go of those attachments because I don't want to then be the victim. I don't want to look like I'm trying to victimise myself.
Yeah.
And then that's worrying about what other people might think of you. And I actually don't give a shit what other people think about
me. Do you know what I mean? Absolutely.
So sometimes I think I do need to be more sort of just letting things be.
Yeah.
Because the situation that I wrote about, which is trying to protect my kids from outside external influences that honestly I can't control it.
I think what it is, it's about making your kids feel so safe in themselves that any external judgment just doesn't affect them. And I think that's the power of it. Do you get what I mean?
Yes. Just keeping them, like if I could keep my kids at home 24/7, I would.
Then what happens then? We get our Scotties of the world. So it's hard, you know what I mean?
And I do want, you know, like there's people who are in the lives who I'm not saying, I'm not telling nobody how they've got to live the life, but I wish sometimes that they would just sit back and stop being so ignorant towards how I live my life.
100%.
And just think, well, you know what? Because I can sit there and say, that's absolutely fine. If you want to believe that way of living is for you, that's fine. I'm not taking that away from you.
Absolutely.
I'm saying, you crack on. But what I am saying is, we've got children in the middle of these situations sometimes. Yeah. And my way of living and my way of thinking is complete opposite to
100%
this opposite person. And it, you know, my children will learn to make their own decisions and their own choices as they grow older. Yeah. But what I'm trying to do now is wrap them in cotton wool because I don't want to damage them.
Yeah.
I don't want them to have to go through traumas like I've had to go through.
Yeah, I agree.
I want them to be, and I know it's not going to happen.
Yeah.
If they're all going to have a heartbreak. They're all going to have relationships that break down. They're all going to go through somebody passing away and grieving.
But I think it's gorgeous that they've got you and Andrew who are so open to this that, like, they're always kind of listened to and stuff like that.
Yeah.
Because I feel as well, tap into it though, because I feel like so many people are scared to tap into it, because it was beautiful to see, like we say, I use Scott again as an example, because look how he's been through since. He's like, oh, I'm going to come back because I like how I'm feeling. I'm loving this release. So, you know, the same with this, the people around you right now. It's like, why don't you just tap into it? Because you might love the way that it starts to make you feel and just getting it out.
Instead of being called a weirdo or...
hippie.
You're losing your mind. That's a big one, isn't it? Are you all right? Yeah. You're losing your mind. And then sometimes I'll sit there and I think, even if I am, I feel all right about it.
I was laughing with one of my friends the other week, and because I've not had a proper drink since November. I've had the odd one, but like, again, it just hasn't been anything that I've really been focused on. I've just been focused on other stuff. And she said something and I said, oh, I just can't be bothered. She went, I know. She said, how different are we? She said, I do this and you just pray to the moon. Well, I cried laughing.
I talk about universe all the time, but it's something I do say every day. I said the same thing every day. Thank you, universe, for everything that you brought into my life and everything that you continue to bring into
it. I think what people are a bit naive when people are kind of very into like manifestation and affirmations and the universe. What it is... we have people whose faith is the Catholic Church, the Christian Church, and, you know, there's that belief of, like, obviously God and, like, that faith that everything's going to be okay. When you step into a spiritual world, what becomes then is the universe is just the same faith as what we put on God.
It's the same thing. It's just how you call it and what you see as. Everything, there is always going to be a higher self. They've got to be.
You need it, because otherwise what you're doing, you're just literally going through life thinking, oof.
And some things you can't control, and sometimes it's just learning to let go of the control side of things and sit with life and let life just take you. But I do think that if these sort of people who do think we're crazy or whatever.
Do you know what, though? I do feel like with Instagram and stuff now, though, Nick, like it's becoming, since COVID, people have just been in this rut thinking, ugh, do you know what I mean? I notice it in clinic, you probably do yourself, and they've just been in this rut. But I feel like this year, so many people are coming into like yoga, self-awareness, literally manifestation little courses, because people just want to feel better. That wellness is coming through. That people,
it's the positive, like the positive things that you get from it. Like people look at me and they'll say, oh, like you've done amazing for yourself.
Which you have, so you should be so proud.
And I am. That the be all and end all was to be successful.
Yeah.
For me, I had to be, like I said, but now in life, I think sometimes it wasn't just about being successful. Yeah, it was about becoming me.
Yeah, absolutely.
And the new journey that I've become has then been the role model to other people and my kids. And like I attract a lot of people who are broken.
Yeah.
And sometimes
which
for me,
warm, and literally they know it's a safe space that they're coming to.
Yeah. But then on the flip side of that, we can't fix broken people if they don't want to fix themselves.
100%.
So unless, like, it's all right me saying here, love, read that book.
But I love the little tagline on this, do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
I think it's about, is it inside, and it's be a journey to become your own love story.
Yeah.
And it's so beautiful, that little tagline. And it's just like, you know what, if you've got so much self-love for yourself, it radiates to everyone else. So they start to feel it and then start to feel that love from you as well.
Yeah.
And I think it's just a matter of doing that, isn't it? And I was watching a film last night and it was about Matthew Perry and his addiction. And I couldn't believe how many enablers were around him. in terms of like medical professionals as well, Nick, that was taking advantage of literally selling him vials of ketamine, which would cost them $12. They sold him, I think there was 22 vials of ketamine over this space of time, and they were reading the texts out and they charged him $55,000. They were preying on his vulnerability, yeah. And these are people that should be trusted. And there was one text that one of his doctors sent to the other doctor and said, how much can we get out of this moron? You're a medical professional.
Yeah.
Like literally getting enriched by someone's vulnerability. How about saying you're not having no more? He might still be alive.
Yeah.
And it really upset me. I was like, wow, like people are ruthless when it comes to money.
Yeah. And people thrive off someone else's misery. I'll be honest, that is something that I've had a lot of throughout life. And there is still people out there who look at me and
they can't wait for the fall.
Yeah, they're waiting for it.
You know what I mean?
They'll be waiting a long bloody time for my fall, I tell you that.
Especially in this work, it's got to be like, but I'd rather them come along with me and let me bring them up because you're never going to see it.
Do you know what? That has always been, I've always been the person to say, you can also have it.
Of course. Well, it's abundant.
Yeah. And come with me.
Exactly.
You don't need to be sat there looking at me as though I've done the wrong, because I've actually done nothing but make things better for me and my kids.
Absolutely.
And if you're so pissed off about
that. You've shifted the focus, do you get what I mean? So while you're there focusing on seeing like the fall of someone else, that focus could be on yourself to really bring yourself up and kind of make something of yourself as well. But too many people are scared to do that though.
Yeah, and so many people just sit living in the comfort zone. And I was actually listening to a book on my ear this morning, Feel the Fear and Do It Anyway.
Okay.
And that's a really good book. Well, it's audio for me because it's in car, but they was just saying about people who, you know, are in work and they're unhappy, they're in a relationship and they're unhappy. And like, say, these external influences, it's up to you to change that. Stop being the victim, saying, oh, well, you know, my ex-wife's this, this and this.
Yeah.
My boss at work's like X, Y and Z causing this, this and this. And it's making me feel like this. And my daughter's just going out getting drunk. And well, is that you taking accountability for your life? Or no, you're not. You're victimising yourself. Yeah. So take accountability for how you're living your life and do something about it.
And remain strong.
Yeah.
Literally get a new job.
Yeah. Get these people who are obviously causing you these feelings, either love them from a distance or cut them out your life.
100%. And you know, it's true that when you say about taking back that kind of like, when something's going wrong, just let it go.
Yeah.
Because it's not meant to be. Anything that's meant to be for you is easy.
Yeah.
If it's not easy or kind of flowing in a way. Look, if you want something, you need to put the work in. It is going to be hard work, but it should flow. However, if it's not flowing, you're getting met constantly by just literally blocks, cut it, because your energy is not worth it.
So the universe, that's something actually I do stand by that. So if, for instance, you're doing something and the same outcome is just happening over and over and over.
Yeah.
And it's not getting you any further along, then that is the universe telling you to change something.
Yeah.
So if, say, for instance, you're with somebody who's making you feel upset more days than they're making you happy, and all you're doing is complaining about that, the universe is going to keep giving you that.
Of course.
Until you actually think, right, I need change.
I've learned my lesson.
Either get rid of them or put something in place that's going to change that outcome.
Yeah.
And it could be with anything in life, that whether it's your job, a friend, anything, somebody you don't even have any contact with, but you still, if you see them, you automatically get that back up.
Yeah.
Because there's something there what's triggering you.
Yeah.
That just change something. Otherwise, you're going to keep getting slapped in the face.
Of course you are.
Until you do change
it. You just think to yourself, it's a short ride anyway. Do you really want to just be met like that constantly? Like, life's there for enjoying and living. Obviously, there's always going to be trials of reputations or what's the word? Oh, I don't know that one anyway.
We'll Google that.
I'll put it in the comments. Reputations or something like that anyway, isn't it? But it's how you navigate through.
Yeah, of course it is. And it's on you that's no one else's.
Because that's what I loved about this one this weekend. We did that exercise, didn't we? And we spoke about like the story that keeps triggering us and everything. And then when you said it, so say we did the exercise and I'm just talking and I'm telling you, well, this has happened, that's happened. You say it in such a monotone way because you're used to telling the story. So this has happened. And then you go through life telling that story to everyone. And then Kelly made you do it backwards. And you couldn't do it because when you did it backwards, all you could think of was happy times.
Yeah.
It was so difficult. And that really changed everything for me. I was like, oh, wow, okay.
Because that's the most recent events. And that's what I picked up on. So poor Darren, who I was with.
Oh, I love Darren.
It was like, we've got acts. I said, babes, I am an actress.
Anyway, drama school.
So it was, he was laughing his head off at end. It was funny. He was like, that was really good. But like, it's how we attach our emotions to these things. So if we laugh about it, rather than talking about that story. So like me, I really want to control everybody else around me because of how I have been treated. And then if I constantly spoke like that to everybody, how I would feel.
Imagine
whereas if I go, I wish I could control all this, but I know I can't. But that's an example of the way you speak, because then I attach my emotions to that.
Yeah, absolutely.
Whereas that's something I've been trying to do. I mean, you can't, obviously, somebody, this is me, I was like, if somebody comes to you and says, oh, you know, I've just been diagnosed with whatever, you can't be like,
yeah.
You can't do that. You've got to get down to their level and be so compassionate and emotional and understand what they're going through. But then that person, if they're going to tell that story to every single person in that way, of course they're going to feel shit about the situation. Whereas
it's that monotone, low energy, isn't it? And it's like kind of, you don't see then the outcome. Because I've got a couple of friends who have really got over, my auntie, for instance, has got over breast cancer. Now, my uncle passed of cancer when we were all kids. And she was like, it's not beating me. I've got six kiddies there that I need to be there for. And you know what? She's had the all clear and it was down to a mind. And it was like, I'm beating this. It's not beating me because I'm not having my kids lose both the parents.
Yeah.
And you know what? It was incredible to watch. She's rang the bell, literally.
But it isn't it all to do with Matt? And do you know what? I read a post this morning on my way here. Well, I didn't read it. I read it half and half with tears all over my face and everything. But there was something on Facebook posted this morning. Now, I only use Facebook for business, mate.
Yeah.
So I'd literally clicked onto my business but reshirt, and then I saw this post that someone else had shared.
I've been on Facebook for years.
Do you know what? I didn't have it.
Yeah.
Up until, I'd say I've had it 12 months or 2 years maybe at the very most. Yeah. But I go on it, reshare my work, and I come off it.
Post and ghost, I call it now.
Yeah, I don't deal with what's going on. I don't want no who's put the black bin out, and I don't want to know what you're having for your tea, because quite frankly, I couldn't give a shit. If it doesn't concern me, I'm not asked.
Yeah, of course.
But this post really, really triggered me, because I thought, like, she's literally on a deathbed, this girl. She's 26. She lives in Australia. And she'd wrote a letter to the world of what she thinks is good advice for us to live our life like, because obviously she's ready for passing away.
Wow.
Honestly, she's step by step, so from number one to like 20 odd, and each individual step she's listed. If I had my phone here, I'd have got some of them up.
Wow.
One of them was like, don't let someone else tell you how you should live your life.
Yeah.
And there was another bit where she's sort of saying, like, why are you going out spending all your money on designer clothes, cars, materialistic shit that you could go out and buy, like, a best friend, a spur day, go and buy somebody something that's meaningful, what's full of love, rather than going out just for that 1 second of good feeling for yourself that then goes away.
That just doesn't do anything.
And the things she were at, honestly, I was crying reading it, thinking, she was reading that. She's wrote that, while she's passing, in the last days of her life.
It just goes to show what comes at that moment, what really matters. And it's so true that I don't think we tell our friends enough how they mean to us and stuff like that. Like today, I was the same. I've got a friend, Abby, and literally, I keep saying I need to connect. She just come back from Bali, and she's the friend. Like when we were saying, like I've kind of again let go of control or something for something else to come, and it got sent to through today, and I just started crying looking at it because I was like, it was meant to happen. And I sent her a message and I just said, thank you for being so honest with me over something, because look what we've just created through taking that step and having that non-judgmental friend who doesn't want to see you do well. What they are, they're your biggest cheerleader.
Yeah.
And I do the same with her business. And we just say, that's right for it, that's not. And we're to the point too truthful where sometimes you're like, oh, is this going to offend? But we're always raw with what we think's best for each other. And I just sent her a message and I just said, you don't realise how much I appreciate you, because I just love you for that. I've got that relationship with you. I feel like I have with you as well, if I'm honest, Jet, what I mean.
Yeah.
I want the best for you. And
but not everybody does. So I found that with the things she was writing, she's sort of saying, you don't actually know that tomorrow you might be diagnosed with something that they've given you 2 weeks live. In them 2 weeks, what would you ask for? Because I know it won't be a designer top and it won't be a car.
Yeah.
It would be for another day if it's spent with your family and friends.
Do you know
it?
What, Nick? It's so funny that you bring that up, because I feel like that's why I feel like I was so tortured with my mum's passing for a long time, because what was going on with my mum, me and her would clash. And I could go months without speaking to her because I'd be like, I was stubborn, she was stubborn. And we had to bring Scotty home early from Thailand. So it was a race against time to hope that basically he'd make it home before she passed. But I got a day with her where poor Scotty, she'd got into a coma before he passed. And I always felt guilty with that, do you know what I mean? But she held out for him. And I always knew she would. It was always, she's going to wait for a baby, do you know what I mean? But before she went into that coma and she was told... Sorry.
No, right, don't touch you.
What was going to happen? She held my hand and she went, I'm so sorry.
Oh.
And I've always loved you. And you know, that sentence just tortured me for years. And I was just like, wow. I needed more time with her and I didn't get the time. Because once it's there and that health scare comes, and it was just like, they were like the last few conversations we had, and we bonded back to how it should have been if all this ancestral trauma wasn't there, that it would have been that relationship. But to have that last moment to fix everything, it was just like priceless, and it just changed everything for me. Do you know what I mean? And that's why this self-journey was just, but it goes back to them moments again.
Yeah.
You don't know when your time's up.
No, you don't. And you're going about causing havoc for people and saying these horrible things and online bullying. You could be causing trouble with your family. You know, you could be saying awful things to parents.
Yeah.
But you don't really mean it.
Absolutely.
But instead of sitting back and being stubborn about it or letting another outside influence impact on what you do with your life... You be true to yourself. Yeah. And if you want to apologise for something that you know that you're in the wrong for, go and apologise.
Which it is true, isn't it? Because it comes back to that thing, what Kelly says. We'd clash because all I wanted was my mum.
Yeah.
I needed just that protection from my mum. But my mum was hurting. But she wanted her kids. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And we wasn't consciously connecting. But then when you do come to that point where, like we say, it's your divine right, you're about to pass, and then you realise, okay, you can communicate till literally any emotion comes up, and it is true.
Yeah.
What a beautiful weekend.
I know.
Probably have to wrap up. We've kind of gone.
We will. Shall we finish on a weekly wine? Have you got one?
I think, do you know what? Actually, I have. So, and it was good that I'd just done this weekend. So then we were saying we're in our little bubble. So I went down to London for my consultation because I was saying about getting my boobs removed, haven't I? And it went amazing, honestly. Yeah. Like, so, so good. So we'll probably talk about that one in the next one when we've got more time. And I was on the way down, and I travel weekly with them. Do you know what I mean? So they've said, I've gone on the 11 o'clock. So it was an off peak, and I just kind of just have an off peak return. And they just said 174. But I was in that book, The Untethered Soul. So you know when you're just reading, I'm used to just giving them my card and doing it. I thought nothing of it. Thought I must just paid for going. It was the cost for going down and off peak and coming back on peak. So I just put the ticket into my diary on the way home. got on the train coming home and the ticket guard was so rude. And he was like, no, you've been given a single. So I said, well, why have I been charging any time single on the way down when it was an off-peak? So you double charged me already and now you're going to charge me again. And he was like, well, we can charge what we want. So I was like, right, okay, that's fine. I'll still pay the returning fare, but can I have the complaints number? Because I'm not saying it's your fault, but you're taking it as if I am. And it was like I was like being met constantly by like, well, he still didn't give me the complaints number, but it was like I was like saying it was his fault. I'm not saying it's your fault. I'm just saying, can you give me a complaints number? So this fella sat opposite me. Bearing in mind, he's got earphones on. You haven't heard the conversation. And because I was saying, well, can I take your name for when I complain? He automatically thought that I was being rude because I was asking for a complaints number. And he went, do you want my details to support the complaint that's coming through? No one asked for your input. But do you know what? And I just remained calm, even though I was so like thinking, wow, what situation am I in here? Do you know what I mean? Normally I'd go, who are you talking to? And yeah. Like literally, but I just remained calm and I just thought, again, you're tested constantly, aren't you?
Yeah.
Yeah, it brought me out of my bubble for a moment, but then I soon went back in.
I don't feel, well, I wouldn't say that I've not got a weekly whine because there's always something to whine about in the, but because I've done that at weekends and then I've sort of stayed in that bubble, I've just not really had time to come out and whine about anything as such. But mine's more about allowing some other sort of bits and bats that have gone on in my life this week, allowing other people trigger me.
Yeah.
And then because I can't control it,
yeah,
I sort of get aggravated with myself. I mean, I've only done it for the split second and then I'll go, no, Nicola, leave them to it, type of thing. You've got to just crack on. If they want to think that you're doing that,
yeah,
which is definitely not happening, but if they think that, leave them to it.
Absolutely.
And I've just gone back to me and like thinking, you've just done all this at weekend, don't let them bring you out your bubble.
Yeah.
Crack on.
Absolutely.
But for them very minute seconds, I did.
Yeah.
And I go, what? They think what?
Yeah.
And then I go, no.
Just
so I need to learn to keep that at bay forever.
And that will come, to be fair. I think once you start tapping into it, Nick, that'll just become stronger and stronger and stronger. Do you know what I mean? I mean, we can't all live like this forever, but we all do come in and out of it. But we just start to just control it a bit more.
Yeah, I won't be a monk, me. I actually won't be a monk. I'm not joking.
We're coming.
We'll leave it there on that one and then we'll bring it in next week and I'll be a transitioned monk, I'm telling you.
Shaved your brows off because we're getting hate for the brows and shaved your hair off.
Honest. And then no tan.
At least they've won.
Well, you know.
I'm now a monk.
I am. Namaste. See you next week. Think like a monk.
Oh, namaste.
Namaste.